The title of this presentation is The Platinum Rule, Principle-Based Virtue. My name is Mike Earle. We're all familiar with the Golden Rule, which admonishes us to do unto others as we would have others do unto us. This may be the most popular moral rule in existence. At least it gets a lot of lip service. But what is the Platinum Rule, and how does it work? The Platinum Rule seeks to do the Golden Rule one better. The Platinum Rule says, do unto others as others would have done unto themselves. Now, this may sound like nothing more than a simple tinkering with a few words, but there's more to it than that. An examination of the Platinum Rule reveals the crucial role that principle plays in the development of moral understanding. The Platinum Rule is a special application of a moral principle that I like to call the principle of self-ownership. Now, I'll talk more about the principle of self-ownership in just a minute. Before I do that, though, I'd like to talk briefly about principles in general. Let's start with the obvious question. What is a principle? A principle is a rule of conduct. A principle articulates behavior that is consistent with something. Now, because there are lots of different somethings out there, naturally, there are lots of different principles. And I like to divide these principles into two broad categories, natural principles and human principles. Natural principles are what we commonly call scientific principles. Like all principles, natural principles articulate behavior. In this case, the behavior of something in nature. For example, the planets orbit the sun in elliptical paths. Force equals mass times acceleration. And for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. These are natural principles. Natural principles are discovered facts about nature. They are not the inventions of human beings. Natural principles are rooted in reality. They are objective. And because they are objective, they function independent of human value or opinion. And to the best of our knowledge, behavior contrary to natural principles is not possible. Human principles, on the other hand, are the inventions of human beings. Human principles articulate behavior, in this case human behavior, that is consistent with some human value. Unlike natural principles, human principles are subjective in nature. Also, unlike natural principles, obedience to human principles is optional. An example of a human principle would be the principle of honesty. Honesty is a principle that describes behavior that is consistent with some human value. In the case of honesty, that human value is the truth. Moreover, unlike a natural principle like gravity, which we all have to obey whether we like it or not, obedience to the principle of honesty is purely optional. Another human principle is one that I mentioned earlier, the principle of self-ownership. The principle of self-ownership is really rooted in two human values, a value for human life and a value for human liberty. Now, because this principle is rooted in a value for human life, it's important that we be clear as to what we mean by human life. And for the purpose of our discussion here, I'd like for you to think of a human life as possessing two fundamental aspects, a quantity aspect and a quality aspect. Let's consider the quantity aspect first. Now, when I talk about quantity of life, I'm talking about time. How long does life last? Is there life after death? Is there life before birth? Do we live forever? I think honesty forces us to admit that we don't know the answers to these questions. I certainly don't know. I think honesty forces us to admit that the only life we really know anything about at all is this present life. Everything else is pure speculation. So in an effort to remain true to the principle of honesty, the principle of self-ownership operates under the assumption that this life is all there is. Now, I'm not saying here that there is no life after death or that we don't live forever. What I am saying is that the principle of self-ownership operates under the assumption that this life is all there is. When we focus our attention on this life, some very useful things can take place in terms of morality. You see, by limiting our focus to this present life, we force ourselves to treat life as a limited resource. It doesn't go on forever. Its quantity is finite and can be measured in units of time. Under the principle of self-ownership, this time aspect of life belongs to you. It doesn't belong to me, or to the U.S. government, or to the Pope, or to anyone else. It belongs to you. You own it. Now, having made this assumption about life and who it belongs to, we're now in a position to make some meaningful moral judgments. We're now in a position to say that such and such behavior is wrong, and we're able to say why it is wrong. Murder, for example, is obviously wrong. But why is murder wrong? Well, it's wrong because the killer is taking life that does not belong to him. In fact, he's taking all the life his victim has left. Within the framework of the principle of self-ownership, this is wrong. In fact, it's about as wrong as you can get. How about theft? This, too, is wrong. Why is it wrong? It's wrong because when the thief steals another person's property, the thief is, in a very real and quantifiable way, taking part of that person's life. Think of it like this. Imagine that this time aspect of your life could be poured into a bottle, like a liquid. Just like the song says, time in a bottle. So you've got this bottle of liquid life, but you've only got one bottle of the stuff. And when it runs out, you can't just run down to Albertsons and get a refill. So this is some precious stuff. Now let's say that you want to buy a TV set. But to earn the money to pay for this TV set, you have to work for 40 hours. In other words, this TV set is going to cost you 40 units of this liquid life. Imagine pouring a measured quantity of this precious liquid out of your bottle and into a little cup, and then carefully handing this little cup over to the cashier at Sears or Best Buy in exchange for a TV set. You see, that's really the essence of the exchange. Life for property. So when some jerk comes along and steals your TV set, the thief has, in a very real and quantifiable way, taken from you a portion of your life. 40 hours of it. A whole cupful of the stuff. That's wrong. Why is it wrong? It's wrong because the thief is taking life that does not belong to him. Here's another example. Let's say that you and I are friends, and I ask you to meet me for lunch. Let's also say that I happen to be one of these people that's always showing up late for appointments. And in this case, I show up 15 minutes late. Is this wrong? Yes, it is. Why is it wrong? It's wrong because I have just caused you to spend part of your life doing something you probably wouldn't have done had you known beforehand that I was going to be late. Now, granted, it's only 15 minutes we're talking about here. But what could you have done with those 15 minutes? Your 15 minutes, had you not spent them waiting for me? Well, you might have got a little work done around your house, spent that time with your kids, played with the dogs, done a tequila shot, sat naked on the bed staring into space. It doesn't really matter. It's your life. It belongs to you. You do with it whatever you want. Now, granted, showing up 15 minutes late to an appointment is not a crime that warrants the death penalty or anything. Still, I think this example is important because it demonstrates how universally practical the principle really is. You see, whether we're talking about the atrocity of murder or the discourtesy of tardiness, the very same principle tells us why both actions are wrong, and it also tells us why they are wrong to different degrees. One more example. You've got two people in love, and they're going to get married. The man promises the woman that he will never cheat on her, yet in his heart, he knows he's going to cheat. Cheating is just a bad habit he's picked up over the years. So the man is lying to his fiancée. Now look at this investment of life this young woman is making in this relationship. Not just in quantity of life, but in quality of life as well. Had she known beforehand that her husband was going to be a lying, cheating scumbag, well, perhaps she would have never made that commitment in the first place. Perhaps she would have invested her time, her efforts, her life with someone else. So can you see how simple this is? You don't have to climb to the top of a mountain or stop eating for 40 days in order to know why murder, stealing, and lying are wrong. That they are wrong can be argued from the very experience of life itself. I know all this may sound a bit analytical, but I don't see that as a problem. In fact, I see it as a great advantage. Principle provides us with the oughts and the ought-nots of our behavior. The value on which our principle is based provides the why behind our behavior. Now, although a human principle will often dictate very specific behavior, it is not a static list of rules. Instead, the principle can accommodate any behavior that is consistent with its value. Now, what this means is that an action that would be viewed as immoral under one set of circumstances might be viewed as moral under a different set of circumstances. A moment ago, I gave an example of a man lying to his fiancée, and in that case, the lying was wrong. But is lying always wrong? Well, let's say that it's late at night, and there's a loud knock at your door. It's a female friend of yours, and she's obviously been violently attacked. After you let her in, she tells you that her boyfriend has been drinking, that he flew into a fit of rage, and then beat her up. Then, there's another loud knock at the door. This time, it's the boyfriend. He's standing there with a baseball bat in one hand, and he wants to know if you've seen his girlfriend. You tell him no. In other words, you lie to him. Now, according to our principle, is telling this lie wrong? No, it's not. In this case, we've done the right thing. Why? Because the principle of self-ownership dictates behavior consistent with a value for human life and a value for human liberty. When the boyfriend attacked this woman, he was taking her life. He could have killed her. That's quantity of life. He was causing her physical and emotional pain. That's quality of life. These are dramatic violations of the principle. So in this case, we were justified in lying in order to preserve this woman's right to live her life unmolested. You see, that's how principles work. They dictate behavior consistent with some human value. Let's turn now to the quality aspect of life. The quantity aspect of life, the time aspect, is something that anyone can measure. It's objective. The quality aspect, on the other hand, can be determined only by the individual whose life it is. This quality aspect of life is subjective. Good quality of life to one person does not necessarily represent good quality of life to another. Think about the guy who plays pro football. Now, here's an activity in which big sweaty guys beat the hell out of each other, right? I mean, it's really a form of consensual battery. Even so, these guys love to play football. I don't. I like to watch it. But play it? Forget it. Quality of life is a very personal thing. It's also one of the driving forces behind the concept of consent. Look at the role that consent plays in a game of football. Under a different set of circumstances, grabbing someone and throwing him to the ground would be immoral, even criminal. But in a game of football, where all involved are willing participants, the very same action could actually be viewed as a good thing. Think of how this works with sex. When it comes to sex, individual consent is what makes the difference between lovemaking and rape. And it's only the individual whose life it is that can make that call. Consent makes all the difference in the world. Consent is what determines whether the very same action constitutes charity or theft, love or rape, euthanasia or murder, employment or slavery. But for consent to exist at all, we have to view the individual as the owner of both the quantity and the quality aspects of his life. When we looked at how acts like murder, theft, and lying impact quantity of life, you may have noticed that each of these actions also impacts quality of life. Murder, for example, not only robs a person of whatever years of life he would have had otherwise, but it also robs him of the quality he could have experienced during those years. And of course, the act of murder itself is often one that inflicts unimaginable physical and emotional pain on the victim. Physical and emotional pain are qualitative in nature. And how about when somebody steals your TV set? Well, think about this. You not only gave up time to acquire that TV set, but you gave up quality of life as well. You may have preferred to spend your time at the beach, but because you needed the money to buy that TV set, you went to work mowing lawns instead. Now, when somebody steals the thing, all those lawns you mowed, all that sweat and effort, all that sacrificed quality of life on your part, goes down the drain. You might as well have just spent your time at the beach. So where does the Platinum Rule enter into all of this? I don't know if you've noticed, but so far all of our examples have had a common negative theme. Don't murder. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't be late. In short, don't take life. There is a positive application to the principle as well. And this positive application is what I like to call the Platinum Rule. Not surprisingly, since immoral behavior is characterized by the taking of life, moral behavior, virtuous behavior, is characterized by giving life or adding life. Of course, that begs the question, how do we add life? Well, let's analyze this in terms of the quantity and quality aspects of life. Now, for most of us, adding quantity, i.e. years, to another person's life is probably not realistic. Of course, if you happen to be involved in something like medical research, you may very well be in the business of adding quantity to people's lives. And if you are, hey, that's great. Under the principle of self-ownership, this is virtuous work. But even if we are not in the business of adding quantity to the lives of others, we are all capable of adding quality to the lives of others. And that's really what the Platinum Rule is all about, enhancing another person's life, making it better. And making it better according to how the other person defines better. Do unto others as they would have done unto themselves. Let me illustrate with a couple of hypothetical situations. Hypothetical situation number one. Let's say that I really enjoy watching stock car racing. Now, it just so happens that through a friend of mine at work, I've scored a pair of tickets to see the Daytona 500. I am so excited, I can hardly see straight. So I have these two tickets, and because you are my best friend in the whole world, I want to give you one. Now, this is about the nicest thing I can imagine myself doing for another human being. At least, it's the nicest thing within my value system. Now, you, on the other hand, aren't as wild about the sport as I am. Nevertheless, seeing how excited I am, and because you're my friend, you agree to go, and we have a good time. Hypothetical situation number two. Let's suppose that I've known you long enough to know that the sport that you're really into is golf. I also happen to know that you're a huge Tiger Woods fan. Now, let's suppose that during my travels, I happen to meet Tiger Woods, just by chance, in the airport. I talk to him briefly and get him to autograph a publicity photo that he just happens to have on him. Now, I could keep this photo for myself, or I could take it to a collector's shop and get maybe, I don't know, $100 for the thing. But then I think about you, and I think about what a nutsoid Tiger Woods fan you are. And I think to myself, you know, this photo would mean the world to my friend. So I decide that I'm going to give this picture to you. In fact, when Tiger signs the thing, I have him address it to you instead of to me. I then have the picture framed and gift wrapped, and then I give it to you. And when you unwrap the thing, you're so excited that you can hardly see straight. Now, granted, these might not be the best of examples, but can you see the difference between these two stories? And more importantly, can you see why they're different? In the second example, I did unto you as you would want done unto you. I did something that added value to your life, that added quality to your life, according to how you define quality. The darndest thing about this rule is that when I do something like this for you, I benefit as well. And why is that? It's because I value you. I value our friendship. And when I can add quality to your life, I strengthen the bonds of that friendship, which in turn adds quality to my life. So there's a wonderful synergy in the Platinum Rule. Now notice, too, that this rule can be applied to just about any situation where human beings interact. Think of business. One of the reasons successful businesses succeed is because they figure out what it is their customers want, and then they give it to them. They operate according to the Platinum Rule. Now, they might not call it that, but that's what they're doing. Also, have you ever read any books on good sex? Now, I haven't personally, but I'm told that the general theme in all these books is to find out what it is your partner likes and then do it to them. That's the Platinum Rule in action. Think, too, of the grander endeavors of the human race. Not that sex isn't a grand endeavor, but I mean finding the cure to some disease or inventing some new technology or creating some new work of art. You see, these are all examples of the Platinum Rule in action. All of these endeavors add quality to people's lives as quality is defined by those on the receiving end of our efforts. What we're really talking about here is something I think we're all familiar with. It's called service. There's a very special feeling you get when you do something that truly benefits another person. You feel useful. You feel valuable. And you are valuable. You're doing something that creates a real positive difference in the life of another human being. You're adding to the quality of that person's life. Now, service can take many forms. It can take the form of charity work, obviously. But it can also take the form of a business that creates products and services that add real value to the lives of its customers. It can take the form of helping a family member in a time of need, or in just doing little things for someone that will add to the quality of that person's life. Now, are there moral limits to what we can do for others? Well, of course there are. Lest we forget, all of this service takes place within the bounds set by the principle of self-ownership. If your girlfriend would really like a new car, giving her one might be very nice of you. But you can't just go out and steal one. The Platinum Rule is the positive application of the principle of self-ownership. It's about enhancing the life of another person. It's about adding value to the life of another person, according to how that other person defines value.